I am rolling.
I am not. Should I? Oops. There we go.
We're here.
Hey, everyone. I'm Kimberly. I know. We're here. And I'm Kimberly Adams. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make today make sense.
And I'm Megan McCarty-Carino. Thank you so much for joining us. It is Hollowed Out Shell Thursday.
And this is like your area of expertise. So
I was sort of told that I hollowed everyone's shells out like for two Thursdays worth last week. So I am making an effort this week to hollow in the shells a little bit.
What is your state of hollowness at the moment?
I'd say it's like half hollow. Things are getting to me in the world, but I think I'm starting to process and move through. What's your state of hollow? How's your shell?
I am sort of riding high off of a DIY project that I did this week.
Ooh.
Where I painted an accent wall, and I just have like this real sense of accomplishment. So
that is extremely earned.
Thank you. And so I'm feeling pretty good about it and not so hollow. And I am determined that even though my news fix is, you know, got some news that could be viewed as not great about it, it's also not terrible. And I'm determined to find like happier outcomes for everything. So why don't you go first? So if you do fully hollow us out, I can bring us back.
I don't think I'm going to fully hollow us out at all. I purposely, even though it's Hollowed Out Thursday, I decided to take the high road and look for some positive news. So I was very interested in a story that was in the LA Times today. This is a data point that's kind of been out there a little bit for a couple months, but it's kind of becoming more clear that Native Americans have the highest vaccination rate of any racial or ethnic group. It's a little bit hard to like parse through the data since not everyone gives their race or ethnicity when they get vaccinated. But according to the data that we do have collected by the CDC, Native Americans, according to this article, are 24% more likely than whites to be fully vaccinated, 31% more likely than Latinos, 64% more likely than African Americans, and 11% more likely than Asian Americans. And I wanted to bring this up, first of all, hat tip to that community for getting vaccinated, doing their part to, you know, contribute to the pandemic. But also because, you know, many experts had been concerned this is a population that faces a lot of structural barriers to vaccination. And so looking at some of the ways that, you know, it's those barriers have been overcome in this community, I think could be helpful as we look at what is a very heterogeneous, you know, kind of group of unvaccinated folks that we hope to move into the vaccinated column.
So what did they do differently from everyone else?
Yeah. So one of the things is, I guess, a huge portion of the Native American population in the U.S., they're served by the Federal Indian Health Service, which is like a very centralized kind of care provider. So even though many, I think, Native American communities are not necessarily like they may be far from healthcare in their communities, they are served by this kind of centralized federal entity that keeps track and was given a lot of leeway to kind of determine, you know, which groups went first. They really focused on sort of tribal elders and tribal leaders. And tribal leaders also, you know, really got involved in like local media, local social media, and influencing the community. Of course, you know, as in many communities with you know, greater rates of diabetes and, you know, hypertension and all of the sort of challenges that that community faced, there was 2.5 times more Native Americans killed by COVID than white Americans. So it was a very big priority for, you know, tribal leaders to really get as many people vaccinated as possible. So I think part of it was sort of the central healthcare thing, having, you know, leaders in the community kind of speaking to the community and a health system that is geared toward that community with people who are a part of the community, I think were really, really big parts of it. And they did some sort of interesting things with how they prioritized folks to get the vaccine. One of the groups, they put native language speakers ahead in the line.
Because so many of those languages are at risk of, you know, the people who can actually speak them and understand them fluently are getting older. Yeah. So, and that's the risk population for that, for COVID, of course, the highest risk population is older people.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. And I imagine that also, you know, set a good example for the community to see, you know, tribal leaders getting vaccinated early, their elders, like you said, getting vaccinated early. So I wonder how much learning is actually going to be done here because, you know, there's like, will the rest of the medical community look at this and say, what can we learn from the tribes and, you know, replicate that elsewhere. So that's really cool.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, no. Do you want to jump in with your news fix?
Sure. Yes. Okay. So 2 census-related news fixes. So yes, everyone was paying attention today to the numbers that came out that are going to be the foundation for redistricting. And that's going to be a big political battle. And we learned a lot of things about, you know, how the population of the United States has changed. We're more diverse. We live more in cities. Apparently, a lot of us aren't really having many kids. And so our, you know, our population is starting to skew older, which has big influence for the labor force. One thing I thought was interesting was kind of down in the announcement, but the census in the 2020 census, they changed the way that they asked questions about race and ethnicity. And I'm going to just read little bits and pieces of this. The 2020 census used the required 2 separate questions, one for Hispanic or Latino origin and one for race, to collect the races and ethnicities of the U.S. population. So what happened is they did all this research and found from both within the census and outside researchers that the way they were asking questions about how people identify was missing big chunks of the population or didn't capture people's actual racial identities. So yes, these numbers show that the country is more diverse. But according to this, we are confident that the differences in the overall racial distributions are largely due to improvements in the design of the 2 separate questions for race data collection and processing, as well as some demographic changes over the past 10 years. So even though the headline numbers are like, oh, we're becoming way more diverse, it seems like what they're actually saying is we've been more diverse than we thought that we were. Now we just know we're giving people the space to talk about themselves in a more way that is relevant to them. Yeah. And we're getting to be more demographically and racially diverse. So that was interesting. The other interesting census thing, which is a little more hollowed out shell-y, is another bit of census information. So since roughly very early in the pandemic, the census has been doing these weekly pulse surveys where they survey a bunch of people to see how they're doing economically, personally, whatever, as a result of the crisis that is the pandemic. This most recent household pulse survey showed that LGBT adults, and the census uses LGBT as opposed to LGBTQ or IA or plus or anything, LGBT adults were more likely to report living in households with food and economic insecurity than non-LGBT respondents. In fact, let me scroll down. Overall, about 13.1% of LGBT adults lived in a household that experienced food insecurity in the past 7 days, compared to 7.2% of non-LGBT adults. It's, you know, close to double.
Wow.
So some of the other numbers are bad. Unemployment is higher. Difficulty paying for household expenses is almost 10% higher. So these are bad numbers. However, the reason we have these numbers is because for the first time, the census asked the question about sexual orientation and gender identity in the survey, which is a huge shift. And I have interviewed a lot of economists who focus on LGBTQ community, and one of the communities, and one of the common complaints is we just don't have the data. And now there's effort to get the data. So these are bad numbers, but we have them because we're getting the data.
Yeah. Having data is a good first step. I know I did some reporting when the Supreme Court decision came down last summer about, you know, job discrimination and, you know, sexual orientation, and tried to sort of quantify some of the actual economic effects of discrimination. And that is something that came out of just, you know, it's really hard to quantify how discrimination plays out in our economy without having that kind of data. It's so valuable.
Yeah. Okay. Another valuable thing is...
smiling.
Yes, smiling. So let me go first because mine starts out a little hollow, but it's going to go better. And so as just about everybody knows at this point... Jeopardy chose a host, two new hosts, Mike Richards and Mayim Bialik, to be the new hosts of Jeopardy after a very long, drawn-out, and what seems to be performative search to fill the position in order to give the job to somebody already on the inside who, you know, seems to be very qualified. A lot of the Jeopardy folks really like him. Mayim Bialik is, you know, a scientist and really fun from Blossom and Big Bang Theory. People love her. But, you know, having this big, long search process, supposedly being super inclusive and actually taking into consideration the opinions and insight of, you know, fans and things. You know, a lot of people were less than thrilled with the outcome and have been very publicly saying so. Leaving that aside.
Are you
going
to make me smile, Kimberly? When is the smile coming?
The smile is coming because among the people who seem to have been upset that the host was not LeVar Burton was Ava DuVernay. And she tweeted, me trying to create a show right in this moment for LeVar Burton to host and make an international hit. And in the replies, LeVar Burton says, check your DMs. I am
magic
smiling.
Magic in the making. Okay.
Magic in the making. And look, I don't watch Jeopardy. I didn't watch anybody's trials. I have not too much incentive to start watching Jeopardy at this particular moment. And, you know, maybe the existing fan base will be very, very happy with this outcome and you know, wish everybody the best in their new roles. However, what I'm really excited about is the LeVar Burton, Ava DuVernay show.
So
that
needs
is my
that.
Smile.
Yes,
the world needs it.
Yeah. Okay, so my smile, I want to preface it with saying that I do understand that what I'm about to talk about may not be the best for the bear, who is the central character, because it's probably not good for bears to be desensitized enough that they walk through human grocery stores, which is what happened in L.A., grocery store last weekend. So it happened on Saturday, but kind of the videos are starting to like make their way onto the internet. And how you know that it was an LA grocery store, okay, granted, it was sort of in the outer reaches of the San Fernando Valley. So it's not like it was like in downtown LA, but still, this was in LA. And how you know it was LA was because one of the videos was taken by the actress Tisha Campbell of Martin, who on her
Tisha Campbell.
Yeah, so she saw the bear. the bear just sauntered into this Ralph's in this this place called Porter Ranch, which is in the San Fernando Valley. You know, I mean, it is, it's not like a super urban area, but I live in an area of LA where we often have coyotes. We had a bear that was in a tree a couple years ago that was just down the street. And it just kind of, I just find it a little bit magical that even in this kind of urban environment that we still live among these beautiful, majestic creatures. And sometimes they make their way into our grocery stores. Pretty special.
Yeah, it's special. You're right. Not great for the bear, but, you know, urban wildland interface. And man, California, you all, you have earthquakes and bears and, you know, traffic. I mean, although I am in Washington, D.C., we have our own set of problems. But anyway, no, yeah. That's great. And I actually went and watched the video, and her reaction is, I think, quite appropriate to seeing
is.
A bear in the
if
grocery store.
If I saw a
store.
Bear in a grocery store, I think I would do the same. There's a lot of swearing and some alarm. I mean, it is a small bear. It's an adolescent bear. So not like, it's not the scariest bear, and it is quite a beautiful bear, I must say. But that's it for us today.
Well,
we'll be back tomorrow for Economics on Tap and the YouTube live stream. That's at 3:30 Pacific time, 6:30 Eastern time. In the meantime, please keep sending your questions. We're at makemesmart@marketplace.org or leave us a voicemail. Our number is 508-827-6278, also known as 508-UBSMART.
Such a nice bear, except still bear.
I don't know if he took any groceries, but yeah. Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera. Today's episode was engineered by Drew Jostat. Tony Wagner is the digital producer. This week's newsletter was written by Marketplace's Janet Wynn.
Yay, Janet!
Yay,
the
Janet!
The senior producer is Bridget. Yeah. Senior producer is Bridget Bodner. Satara Nieves is the executive director of On Demand.